Amateur Presentation.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
Hey, bub. How are you?
Dude, it feels so good. I woke up this morning, I got a bowl of cereal, and I watched X-Men 97 for the second time. And Eric, I haven't stopped thinking about anything else since we watched these screeners. I cannot stop thinking about it. It is perfect. I'm just going to go right into it. I can't believe it's real. It feels like something that shouldn't exist. It feels modern yet nostalgic. It's got a little bit of film grain to make it look old, which I was joking about earlier today. It's funny. It's earnest. It's corny, but weirdly feels, you know, Marvel studioized in the way that its cliffhangers are set up. And I know the old show had cliffhangers and stuff too, but it's just the way that the endings with the orchestral version of the theme and the credits. And I'm like, oh my God, we're getting the best of both worlds here of old and new and everything. And I can't believe it's real. How are you doing?
Well, Matt, I gotta make a confession here. I think we have to stop the show because I didn't know we were talking about X-Men 97. I thought we were talking about Mutant X.
Oh, damn. All right. My bad. All right.
Do you remember that show, the live action Mutant X series?
No. What was it, like a CW kind of style?
No, it was even worse. It was like a Canadian version of X-Men that was kind of like the ripoff version. I don't know if you want to type it up as we're talking about X-Men 97. But yeah, it's one of those shows where you think, okay, well, they're reviving this simply because, you know, it's run a cycle or a course of we've gotten to a point.
I do kind of remember Mutant X. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to X-Men 97, we've gotten to that point now where everything old is new again. So let's, you know, bring this back. And watching it, I'll say it now in terms of my just summary, it's an exhilarating revival set to one of the greatest music intros and captures just the right amount of nostalgia with insightful social commentary. It's extremely reactionary. So a lot of the material here is analogous to, or you can compare it to in a kind of a metaphorical kind of way, to, you know, January 6th with the insurgents. Yeah. You can talk about sort of, you know, what's going on in the world recently, even though it's not completely one-to-one in terms of its ratio. But when you're watching this show, I think one of the great things about it is that it, as you mentioned, it retains the grain, but it retains the essence of the intelligence of these characters.
Yeah.
You know, you have characters in these storylines that are very smart and thoughtful and expressive. I always loved Beast because he was so articulate and thoughtful in his expressions. And when you get a character like that, when you're a kid, I feel like that's kind of your introduction to the world because, you know, even in this, you know, the first time we see him again, he's listening to Mozart. And so stuff like that, where you get culture within your pop culture, which is quite lovely in that way. But it's also very melodramatic and it's even more so. Absolutely. But it kind of has almost like that soap opera-y, superhero soap opera, Twin Peaks-y kind of vibe at times where everything's a little bit stilted or sort of arch in deliveries, but it still really comes together in such a satisfying manner that when you're watching the show, it has a confidence in itself that it's not like, you know, you have to be sort of sped up with everything that's going on. When you're watching this, it basically puts you right back into where the events left off 27 years ago. So it's not recapping the whole series at the beginning like a lot of the Star Wars series did.
Hilarious bits of exposition, though, when necessary.
Yeah, like, but there's not as much hand-holding, which I was impressed by because I didn't go back and rewatch any of the older episodes coming into this. And so my memory of watching them, you know, on Fox as a kid was kind of hazy in that kind of nostalgic
view.
But
you do have a good memory for that stuff. At least you did with like Dragon Ball Z when we were talking about it a lot and stuff like that, where I have a shit memory. And just so we're clear, everyone, we're reviewing episodes 1 through 3 of X-Men 97. We're going to keep this spoiler free, but if you've seen those first two episodes, which are now streaming on Disney Plus, you'll kind of know what we're referencing and different things. And we might talk a little bit about that stuff, but no major plot points or character development or anything like that. Major spoilers. We're just going to talk mostly about those first two episodes and then tease kind of what's coming up in that third episode and what we thought about that. Yeah, Eric, what you were mentioning too, I watched on New Rockstars, shout out to New Rockstars, I watched an hour and 20 minute recap of the 90s series where they went over every single episode of the original series and kind of recapped it very, very quickly, but gave you kind of the main plot beats and character beats and things like that. So I came in pretty fresh and just some history for X-Men, the 90s series. I was always a Spider-Man animated series guy over X-Men. Like I did watch X-Men in the 90s, but I didn't watch it religiously like I watched Spider-Man the animated series. Like it was one of those things that I would have on, but the X-Men were never my thing. Like never really. Like even when the X-Men movies came out, I never really cared about them, even though they were a big deal. And that group of heroes were never in my kind of, you know, nostalgia, really. Like I did watch the show. Obviously, the opening theme song absolutely rips and is iconic and one of the best intros in anything history. just in anything. So I do remember that, but I didn't remember anything from specific plot points and things like that, because I kind of just dabbled in watching it, like a random episode or some of the crossover episodes and things like that.
Well, so with Spider-Man, right? Because there's that episode where Spider-Man's becoming the Were-Spider, and he goes to Professor X and the X-Men, and the one person that helps him is Beast.
Yeah, and was that on an episode of Spider-Man or on an episode of X-Men?
Spider-Man, because a couple of years ago, I started re-watching the Spider-Man series, and it's interesting because with that show, it's almost like The Simpsons, where so much happens in one episode that there are so many kind of great moments from beginning to end that you think like, oh, this, you know, this memory I have of this moment maybe is in one scene from an episode down the line, but it's like, oh no, it's a part of this tapestry that has like 4 or 5 great moments within one episode.
One episode. Yeah. I absolutely agree. So anyways, that's just a little background for me. So I came into this not even with the like crazy nostalgia that some people do. And I think those people will go, if I'm going this crazy for it, I think those people will be very, very satisfied. Cause I came in just really loving the theme and being open to liking X-Men. I like Wolverine a lot, obviously, from what they did with him with Logan in the X-Men films. And the X-Men movies are kind of all over the place, but mostly enjoyed them, especially the Matthew Vaughn ones and stuff like that. Anyways, going back into these three episodes. Yeah, right off the rip, I was just surprised at one, the look of it, because I love the 239 widescreen, like trying to make it look modern in that way. But then the animation style, both feels faithful to 90s 2D animation, yet feels very modern. Like it does remind me of what we've watched recently in Invincible, although I think the animation is better in this show than it is in Invincible. Some of the Invincible fight scenes are great, but it does remind me of that. But then that, I told you, like that film grain they put on it and just the absolute, like just the package, I just can't believe it looks as good as it does. And then when you add on the melodrama and kind of this silly yet modern and serious with the allegories to what's going on now and what the X-Men have always been about. And I was just really, really impressed, and it was way better than it probably should be. And two, than I thought it was going to be. Like I was always excited for this. Like I love 2D animated stuff, superhero animation. I've been talking to you about this a lot, you know, just when we have our normal off-air conversations with Spider-Verse and things like that, where animation really, you know, superhero stories really shine in animation, especially when you put in a big budget, great storytellers, and just like a lot of effort into it. Because I feel like you see with this show, like budget, you're not limited by the scope of what you can do in live action, right? Or what looks good or how much money you have. So like you can have all of these X-Men in here, all with their powers, fighting giant sentinels, fighting, you know, villain after villain each week. And it doesn't feel overstuffed, and it doesn't feel like it would in a movie where you couldn't possibly have maybe this many characters or this much going on, especially like so frequently, right? You have to build out characters further. And they did that through six seasons or five seasons of the original series. But I think in animation, just the stuff you can do, and if you do it really, really well, like superhero stories kind of shine, and this kind of proves that. And like, I think if you take it seriously, I think you can tell mature stories, which I do think that this show grew up with its audience. Like this is being made, yes, kids could watch it just like any animated series we watched when we were kids, but I do feel like it's being made with a kind of, you know, with the people who grew up watching it, right? So I even felt like I was surprised at how mature some of the storytelling was in these three episodes. And you know, the metaphors and the allegories have always been there in X-Men comics and X-Men stories and things like that. But especially in episode three that we got to see, which will be next week's episode, I was just surprised at how dark it got at times. Like, I'm watching John Carpenter's The Thing right now. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on. This is awesome.
Well, it took elements from the New Mutants. I feel like the writers watched that movie and said, let's get this right, because let's see what they were trying to do and get it right, to the point where there's even a cameo by one of the New Mutants in that episode. So it's very funny to think about that. I just want to quickly go back to the animation style.
Yeah, go to anything you want.
It took me a minute to get used to it, just because it reminded me so much of Archer, especially in the way that the characters, their facial expressions are. Like you watch Archer, which was one of my favorite shows, in that animation style is, again, not a one-to-one comparison, but there's just certain movements that the characters make that feels very similar. So I was waiting for the Duchess himself to show up on the show. But I do like the idea that a lot of the animation here is 2D with, you know, CGI being used sparingly for when they really need it. And it has that kind of painterly quality where it feels like, you know, you have the texture and sort of the tactile quality of the characters, and there's this coat of paint on each one of them that's kind of given them a more vibrant look. And you know, talking about the scale and the scope with animation, you can really play with size and scale and the set pieces with how the action goes, and your mind isn't limited to just the physical realities in which you're designing, you know, a real set, or shooting in volume, or shooting, you know, in green screen,
or a fully CG sequence when you have to make it look photo real, right?
Yeah, you have more opportunities to really be creative with
the choreography, with
but just even going back to the origins of what you're adapting. You know, we've talked about this with Spider-Verse. You mentioned Invincible. I think all three of these properties are doing sort of, you know, what we come to expect with the superhero genre, but at the same time, they're reminding you how ambitious they can be, because when you're watching it, you can kind of let go some of the sillier sort of subplots and storylines, but with live action, and with live action though, there's something where it feels a little bit all the same. Where with this, like I was thinking to myself, okay, if we saw the live action version of Jean in her mind, I know exactly what this would look like, and it wouldn't look as good. But here it works, and it actually adds another interesting dimension to sort of the character designs, but also sort of the world that these characters inhabit.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And my comment on the choreography, I think it's what, going to your point about the set pieces. Like there's an amazing set piece in this first episode that they've kind of released a clip online already about. And if you've watched the first two episodes, you've seen it. It's that last sequence against the Sentinels. And there's the X-Men jet crash sequence. And like that sequence is awesome, dude. And like the way that it's shot and that choreography with Cyclops and the rest of the X-Men and that superhero landing that they all do. And it's like, with me, my X-Men, like, or to me, my X-Men. And like, it fucking rules, dude. Like that whole sequence, this whole thing has made me like Cyclops more than I've ever liked Cyclops. And again, I'm not super familiar with the original series. You can go into that in a second, Eric, but like, I know dorky ass stupid Cyclops from the movies, right? Like
James Marsden and Ty Sheridan.
Yeah. Like it never worked in live action for me. And I like current James Marsden. I even like James Marsden then. It's fine. But it just in this, the way that he uses his powers and the 90s suit of it all, I'm like, everyone looks so fucking cool, man. And like, it's just the way Cyclops uses his powers in this is the first time where I'm like, this dude fucking rocks. And I even though he is still a bit of a dork, and I like the back and forth between him and Wolverine, which has always been there. I love how they make Storm out to be this gigantic threat and then, you know, have to deal with that in a certain way. Like, I think every X-Men or X-Woman gets, or X-Them, gets a moment to shine in these first three episodes. Like how they use Morph, I think, is a lot of fun. Wolverine is obviously awesome. Like Gambit and Rogue and even Jubilee, like there's an amazing dance sequence in the first episode that I thought was just a lot of fun. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed this, and each episode I felt got better and better. And then even the serialized soap opera y melodramatic storytelling that they were doing, I don't know where my memory went, but I always thought it was like sort of villain of the week kind of stuff. And I know they did part one, part two, part three, part five episodes.
They always built up to a big bad.
Yeah. And, but this, I was just surprised that it, like I mentioned earlier, like the end of that first episode, without saying what happens and things like that, and the way the credits come on, it felt in the best way like the MCU shows that I've really liked that Marvel has been putting out. Like even the way that the cliffhanger hits, the way that the credits, like it, they're taking it seriously in a way that is paying homage to the original series, but then kind of growing it up with its audience and also modernizing it with some of the, you know, Kevin Feige, Marvel Studios kind of touch on it in a good way, right? I know people like to drag on the MCU right now and Marvel Studios in general, but I feel like with this, they've just done it in a way that makes it feel important in a way that like What If doesn't, right? Or like, or
a lot of the MCU shows in general, the live action ones, where this, you know, going back just to the costumes again, they're colorful.
Is colorful. Right?
You go back and even watch, you know, Batman, Bryan Singer's movies. They're cool, but they're so everything
it's got
is
that
so
kind of leathery, black and gray. Kind of shit, right?
Yeah, it's all the color's been sucked out of it, you know, and so, you know, it's very much of the early 2000s. But you know, when you're working in this medium, you can really play with, you know, the different character designs and just the costuming and the way that characters move. Like going back to Cyclops again, one of the coolest things about episode one is this factory fight sequence and what he does with his laser vision and how he almost, you know, skates across the factory floor using his lasers. So, you know, things like that. It's like those little touches I think really help add, you know, fun character beats, or when he comes in and helps, you know, Roberto, like you really feel like, oh, this is a great hero moment that's actually earned. And this is the version of Cyclops that has always been more interesting because he is a bit of a, you know, cadet or a Boy Scout in some ways, trying to live up to, you know, what Professor X is. And there's some imposter syndrome here that I think is really such a fascinating psychoanalysis of his character, but it kind of made him a little bit more equal to Wolverine, where when the films were being released, Hugh Jackman was so popular as Wolverine that character really did dominate the rest of the film franchise. It overshadowed all the other characters, whether they be, you know, co-stars or bit players. And so, you know, when you watch the original series, or you watch, you know, these three episodes or continuing on, Wolverine feels a part of an ensemble, and it's not just simply Wolverine and so and so. Yes.
I totally agree with that, because if you look back at the entirety of in even leading into Deadpool and Wolverine, like, it really did, to your point, become the Wolverine franchise, and everyone, like, it wasn't, this is very much an ensemble, to the point where Wolverine's not even like a huge part of it, right? Like, he's just another X-Men who's there.
And he's sure garnish. He he's like spice. Yeah. Like, you add a little flavor to it. You don't put in too much because it can be overwhelming. And it's just the right amount. And that balance for that character leaves you wanting more, but at the same time, it doesn't take away from any of the other characters that maybe you can give them a couple beats as well to play with in the episode. And I still like the idea of the rotating door. Like, even the way that the episode intros play, you see the character lineup change, which I think is also really exciting.
No, I absolutely agree. I noticed it. Episode two starts different. Well, the intro's always been the same, but whoever's on the X-Men team, it rotates out or whatever in that intro, which I think is really, really awesome. And yeah, let's just talk about the intro, man. The way that the show starts right away, even with the Marvel Animation logo. And we did drag on Marvel Studios a little bit when they introduced that thing for Echo, whatever the hell it was called.
Oh, God. Marvel Spotlight?
Spotlight or something. And they've done a few different, we're trying to brand things differently. And you can tell with this being, okay, this isn't part of the MCU, right? This is its own thing. So we're going to brand it Marvel Animation. And I, you know, it's still got the Marvel Studios kind of fanfare look to it. But then I didn't notice all of the different things that they shout out. You do see a bit of a Spider-Man. I don't know if that's from the upcoming show or if that's from an older one that they showed, as well as some other Marvel Animation stuff from What If and different things. But once it just kicks right into that intro, Disney shouldn't even allow you to press the skip intro button. That should be,
it should be illegal. Like,
it should be out of there, because there's not a chance in hell Wednesday mornings. And here's the thing. I've also shit on the decision to put episodes out at 3 a.m. This one, I'm kind of okay with it, because I want to wake up in the morning and watch it.
Right? You got to get a big bowl of cereal. Right. Yeah. You got to sit down and watch it and feel like a kid again.
And that intro starts and you're just like, oh my God, this is incredible. And I just,
my day peaked. Yeah.
And shout out to the Newton brothers who are doing the score to the show. I think the music is actually quite good. I really like the orchestral MCU-ified version of the opening theme that they use as the end credits theme. A little bit more subdued, but they do use the original theme in there and then do an orchestral version. I thought that absolutely rocked as well. Yeah, that whole fight sequence in the first episode, the whole January 6th sequence in the second episode was great. And then, yeah, that third episode, which we'll only touch on, like, it gets very creepy and weird and heady, and you're not prepared. I wasn't prepared for it. I was watching it. I was not. And I'm familiar with that villain, and I don't know in the original series if it got that weird, but Eric, you can maybe touch on that a little bit.
Not as visually weird, creative as this. Like, it was more like this, that episode that you're referring to basically feels, and again, not trying to give anything away, but it almost plays out like you're watching, you know, a Frankenstein film, in a way. But awesome. Then it has almost a little bit of Nightmare on Elm Street, which was what the New Mutants was trying to do. And so you're watching this episode and you're like, man, this is why animation rules, because you don't have
any limits.
You
can go that far.
Limits,
you can do that. Yeah, exactly.
And you also don't have to worry about post-production visual effects in the same way, looking fake or, you know, augmenting something with, you know, practical effects for the actors to look at. So, you know, when you're watching certain scenes, the imagination can run wild here, and it does. And you know, the three episodes, I think what it sort of maintains is sort of, you know, the social commentary on the world in 97, but the world today, and sort of finding that balance as well, because you have we've already mentioned a lot January 6th, but, you know, there's other things that are going on that feel very much, you know, a part of this show. But then it's also, okay, well, like, you know, X-Men in the 90s was very much, you know, looking at marginalized communities, especially the LGBTQ plus community. And that was always a major reference in terms of X-Men being ostracized and, you know, having a disease and being different. So that's all still there. And, you know, there's probably going to be a ton of people that are like, oh, now the X-Men are woke, but X-Men were always woke.
Yeah. I reposted a TikTok that a guy did. That's great. Where he goes into that. He's like, this series is exactly what the X-Men should be, but people will go and complain about it, 'cause that's what people do now. And say like, they made the X-Men woke. It's like, have you read or watched anything?
Or know the meaning behind what the X-Men is, like what they're trying to do. I mean, to the point, going back to the Bad Man, Bryan Singer again, you know, his sort of interest in those characters, and he made a comparison here, was that Professor X and Magneto were a lot like Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, where their ideologies always conflicted with each other, but they were always
trying to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, just different means of doing certain things. One being a peaceful protester and the other one being more aggressive and sort of dominating. So, you know, and using violence to sort of justify the means. Here you have sort of a really interesting sort of take on Magneto for, you know, these couple of episodes and where the character's going. And there's still ambiguity to what his motivations truly are, because like the characters talk about in the show, he's been the arch enemy for so long that it's hard to trust somebody, you know, at face value. And so I think that's
great
going to be
moments with that character too, man.
And apparently he's being lusted over. Online.
Great hair.
Great hair.
Everyone is sexy in this. Okay.
Crop tops. They're bringing it all back. You know,
Gambit with his horny little crop top and just like everyone, just beautiful. And
they should have called this the Sex Men.
It's awesome.
Yeah. But it's one of those shows that it does make you realize how good a comic book adaptation is in animation form and what the possibilities are, and being excited to tune in each week as though you were a kid again. And that kind of feeling of, you know, like being 8 or 9 and watching it and kind of being excited to see these characters that you really liked. And hopefully it'll open the door to maybe Spider-Man 98 or whatever.
I hope they create a whole, dude, I've been saying this for the longest time of like Marvel. They should not do any live action shows anymore. They really shouldn't. Like, and Marvel Studios should be movies. They should be, and they shouldn't be TV. I'm sorry, like it just
and
hasn't
get Sonyverse out of there.
And, oh yeah, we're not even gonna touch that. All right, I saw Madam Web finally. Everyone, it was in an empty theater. I was by myself. It was insane. Anyways, I had a tweet that weirdly went viral that I wasn't expecting to go viral over that movie. Shoot on location too, please, for the love of God.
Which Madam Web did. So
yes, that's what I mean. So, anyways, back to my point. I really just think they should separate the live action stuff and the animated stuff, and they can have animated movies as well, which I think could be really cool. Like Spider-Verse has shown that and things like that, if they really put a huge budget into it and really take it seriously. But I would love for them to build out an animated universe on Disney Plus and have the live action universe stay in the movies. Right? Like it was working in the movies. It's, you guess when your little bit of a downfall was. We've gotten awesome MCU stuff. Don't get me wrong. Some of it on Disney Plus. I love Loki season 2. I've liked a lot of stuff that was on Disney Plus. And maybe we don't get that if Disney Plus didn't exist. I don't know. I think we probably would have in some way. Building out even like a 90s Marvel universe again, but treating it like in an MCU sort of way, which they already did back then because they had a ton of crossovers with the other 90s shows. But if they took them all very seriously, I think you could build out like a really fun universe. Like there is even in that recap I was watching, you forget how many other characters. Some of them are just shown briefly of like their watching or their whatever, but like they involve so much of the Marvel universe in that original X-Men show. And I'm like, if you build that out and say you do a Spider-Man 98 or you do a new Iron Man series or whatever, all these different things, and build out, you know, an Avengers thing, and take it as seriously as you did this, and keep that aesthetic that keeps it very different than the movies. The movies are modern. They take place in the now or in the future or whatever. They sometimes go back to the past. But if you build out a universe in the 90s that has that perfect blend of nostalgia and modern sensibilities, I think it could be so much fun, man. Like, there's a whole, you forget, like, in the all the time travel stuff too, which is a blast, which is so much easier to do in animation, and the kind of melodramatic, ridiculous plot lines, they just work better in animation sometimes too. And you had Kang in the original series as a version of Kang as well, and you had Doctor Strange and Thor at times watching, and like all these different characters. I think you could build out like a super, and we sound hyperbolic, but that's how much I really loved this, where I was just like, I would watch this shit every single week. And if you did other shows in this style and retained that melodrama and corniness, but then still told really interesting stories and use all those, because superhero fiction has been filled with metaphors in all of it, right? So if you take that stuff and take from today and take from the past, and you build out these, you know, nuanced, interesting, mature stories, but still make it entertaining for kids, and then people who grew up with that shit, I think you have something really dynamite on your hands, and I hope that they see that. And I know that this has already been greenlit for a second season, and it seems like it's getting a really good reaction from people. And this is from someone who, if they announce Spider-Man 98, I know they're already doing Spider-Man, what are they calling it now? It's not freshman year anymore, right? Didn't they just change it to like spectacular? I don't know what they're calling it. I forget, but the Spider-Man show that they're doing,
Spider-Man rules.
I forget. I'll figure that out. But
someone's yelling it right now as we're talking.
Yeah,
about
I know. But there's a lot going on, everyone. But anyways, that's my tangent on. I really think just stop making the live action Disney Plus shows. I'd be fine with those one offs like we got with Guardians and Werewolf by Night.
Those, yeah, because they're only yeah.
Like, just give me a 40-minute thing to introduce a character or do some weird experiment, because you say you don't want to take as many risks now or something like that. But maybe we don't need like a 6-hour series that doesn't feel thought out, or maybe they'll get it on track. Who am I kidding? But like, maybe it'll work. But
it's so hit and miss, and that's the problem. Where when you watch, you know, this, and we've only watched the first 3 episodes. But, you know, even talking about things that are outside of the MCU with Invincible, where the consistency is so much better than the majority of the live action films, because they do, after a while, feel like they're coming off of an assembly line. So when you're watching, you know, one movie into another, or following sort of a thread of films, you kind of feel like, okay, well, there's a lot of inconsistencies with, you know, the look and the feel and the direction, because, you know, one movie might be good and then the other one is mediocre. Like, you know, you look at WandaVision, pretty solid way to start off the MCU,
totally,
you know, series. But then the Doctor Strange movie is kind of underwhelming, and it just kind of feels like, oh, well, that's a bit of a bummer that these two things are connected, and you start off on one end and then you drop, you know, to another. And, you know, like, there's just something with this that feels like everything is so well designed, everything is thought out, they've taken the time to write the characters, to bring back a lot of the voice acting cast. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's been some controversy with Bo DeMeo, the creator and one of the writers, which is also very strange that, you know, this is coming out and that also happened around the same time. Not that, you know, this is a first, but usually when this kind of thing happens, it's like, okay, an animator that, you know, you can kind of sweep under the rug or something like that. But with this, it's like the person who was the guy that was supposed to be in charge of it. But yeah, it's just interesting that you're getting a lot of, you know, the you're maintaining the core elements of what made the show popular. And so when you hear certain actors again, obviously, you know, some of them, their voices are a little bit more monotone or a little bit more droll, just based on, you know, age and time and things like that. It happens to everybody. But like, you listen to, I think it's Ray Chase who voiced Cyclops. He pretty much sounds the same. And then even George Buzza, who voices Beast, pretty much sounds the same. And it's also just interesting with Buzza that, you know, Canadian actor that's been in tons of stuff. I was always a fan of Ed Hunt's The Brain.
Wasn't a lot of the original cast Canadian?
Yeah. And so, but Buzza though is interesting because he's the one in the first X-Men movie, the live action film, that drops off Anna Paquin's character at the bar where she meets Wolverine. Yeah. So things like that, I kind of always love where there's that weird, you know, connection to certain things. But yeah, there's a lot of Canadian connections in the voiceover community. Even with the original Spider-Man show from the 60s, Paul Soles, who just passed away not too long ago, was the voice of Spider-Man in that original series. So, you know, like the voice cast, I think is all
Eric
solid.
Bowser,
like,
too, shout out, because I'm wearing a retro kid sweater.
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah.
Too.
No one's phoning it in. Like, it feels everybody's excited to be there. They're bringing back their characters in a way that feels natural to who they were, but still, you know, being able to adapt to the new material, which is kind of nice.
I absolutely agree. And the new additions, the people who had to either take over a role or were recast and things like that, I think everyone is on the same wavelength. And I think everyone gets what this is. And the delivery is consistent throughout everyone, where it is played up to
Wolverine is so Canadian.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's the best, dude. Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's like, I'm going to smoke a dart.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's smoking cigars, for sure. I don't know what else to say. We've said a lot, but I'm very, very, very excited to watch the rest. I think this will be a blast to watch every Wednesday morning until mid-May. I think they have a huge hit on their hands. It's not just what I was worried about with the show is that it would be a nostalgia bait kind of thing where it's just like, okay, it was pure nostalgia play. There's not much more here. And that can get kind of like
Ghostbusters
tiring. We'll be talking about that soon. We haven't seen the new one yet, everyone. So I was worried about that, but it does feel like everyone gives a shit and they want to take this seriously yet make it fun. And I do think that it is much like a lot of the animated shows we watched as kids. I think you could jump into this without seeing the original series. You might be a little, you still got to be a little bit familiar with the X-Men, I think. If not, go watch that great new Rockstars recap. But I do think that this is okay for kids and for people who were kids watching it. Like, I do think a young kid, there's enough. We talked about colorful animation and action sequences and things like that, like fun villains that pop up and things and good fight choreography and a little, it does feel darker at times with some of its violence and things like that, but it never goes overboard like an Invincible or something like that. But so I do think it's good for kids and adults as well, which I think is the best kind of animation. But yeah, I'm all in on it. Can't wait to watch it every week. Can't wait to see if they do, not that I need, because I do want this to focus on the X-Men, but I'm curious, much like that original show where they peppered in other Marvel characters, like, will they bring back any of those 90s style Marvel characters? Because there were always like crossover episodes, right, with other Marvel heroes. So
yeah, Spider-Man had a lot of them, like Iron Man, War Machine, Hulk, Doctor Strange. All those characters would pop up in Spider-Man. So, you know, if they're starting here, I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe start doing that maybe in season two a little bit more, just to kind of settle you into the X-Men universe and let them stand on their own first. As I get a text, but you understand that, you know, there are hints there. There are Easter eggs already, you know, the Daily Bugle newspaper popping up, right? Like, it's stuff like that.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the factory scene with the explosion, you see the paper. So stuff like that, so you got to be aware of. They're already
kind of teasing that, right? Yeah. So I could see, I just really want Spider-Man 98, man. And I think it could happen now. That's the thing. Like, if this is really well received, and I know we're already getting, it's called Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is going to be the animated show that they're doing. And I'm very excited for that. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if they'll do two Spider-Man animated series at the same time. I just, they could. We've had a million Spider-Man animated series, but
I mean, if there's so many Batman movies, why not have multiple Spider-Man shows? I think like the people
that will... in a different universe, right, in a different time period, then it should be okay. Like if one is supposed to be the Tom Holland, you know, alternate, you know, multiverse version of Spider-Man or whatever,
and Spider-Man Noir, right, we're supposedly getting that on Amazon action, right? Oh, live action.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll see that for Nick Cage.
Live action.
Even though we're trashing live action superhero movies.
I'm not trashing them. Like, I think live action, there's still a place for it. That's the thing. Like, I still think both can live harmoniously, right? Like, I do think that obviously with the lead up to Endgame, like, that was huge, right? But like, and it worked completely. And I think there is a place for that. I think that's in cinema, like in movie theaters. And I do think that there's some work to be done, and it's not the same. Like, I think you can get way more melodramatic and over the top in animation, just to all those points you said, Eric, where like, it just works. Like, you, your imagination doesn't have to be limited, and people believe it. Right. I think when you start getting super absurd in live action, there's that uncanny valley. Like, you want it to be real or look real, where you kind of like push it away because you're just like, there's something. If the live action movies were as corny as this gets sometimes, people would hate it, right? But in animation, you embrace it for some reason. And I mean corny in a good way, because like, there's just a lot of lines we didn't talk campy, about how much we right? laughed. Campy, yeah.
Like, you look at the original Batman TV show with Adam West. That is a funny show, but superhero movies and TV shows for the most part have to have obviously Deadpool is self-referential, but have to have a somewhat serious tone. And that was partly because of Batman 89, which kind of brought in this new era of, oh, comic book movies can be dark and gritty. Yeah. And then even with Nolan's, you know, Batman trilogy, that also instilled a quality of, okay, well, we have to go back to this, because you look at the Sam Raimi movies, there's stuff in those films that's very
coming
funny.
Coming back to theaters.
And kind of, you know, Three Stooges-esque, but unafraid to be goofy.
Campy, too.
And campy and over the top. I mean, obviously, it went a little too far with emo Spider-Man and Spider-Man 3. Sure. But I think
that was
that
animated,
almost,
then we might have been fine with it.
Yeah, and that might have scared, you know, producers and filmmakers and writers off from embracing that camp a little bit more, because I think it works for superhero movies, because not every superhero needs to be dark and brooding, and not every superhero needs to be light and fluffy. It really depends on the character ultimately and kind of where you're referencing it. Speaking of references, even though this doesn't take place in the MCU, I would not be surprised if Deadpool and Wolverine at least makes a reference to this in that film coming up, especially with the reshoots that are happening right now. It kind of seems like it would be something that they would find a place for. So maybe there will be a reference there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be very interested to see if this at any point, like, I'm sure it's part of the overall multiverse. If you have a live action, sorry, spoilers for Spider-Verse, if you haven't seen it yet, a live action Donald Glover from the MCU showing up in Spider-Verse, I feel like you could do something here with that, or it doesn't even necessarily have to, but I could see a Deadpool making the most sense of referencing it or randomly traveling to this universe, or even if you have Deadpool show up, which I know he did in the original series at times, right? Like, whether you have something there. I don't know what they're going to do with this Marvel animation stuff. Like, if they'll make it connected and still try to be part of a bigger multiverse, or if they're going to keep it separate, right? Like, and
hear
I
me out. Think,
yeah, yeah.
Alpha Flight 99.
God, oh my God, that's all I want, dude. Like, Alpha Flight, we finally might get like a reference or them showing up at some point, because I know they had a big, they had a, not a huge part of the original series, but they had a, I remember in this recap too, and I remember some of those episodes. Like, I, as Canadians, everyone, if you're not Canadian listening to this, Alpha Flight is all we got, all right? And we have Wolverine, obviously, but like, Wolverine, they've almost taken away from
how
us.
How dare you, no sir? One, we have Todd Deadpool, McFarlane.
Deadpool, I mean, we're getting a very Canadian Deadpool, Wolverine, and Sean Levy combo coming out in a couple months. Will there be a lot of CanCon in that movie? You hope there's some references to Canada. But like, Alpha Flight has what I've wanted for a long time. And now I'm going, you give me animated Alpha Flight, I'm happy. I don't need a live action Alpha Flight, although that would, I would be absolutely stoked for that too. But I just want, you know, I want a Alpha Flight storyline at least in one of these two seasons. If we get a spinoff, great. If not, I'm fine. But like, I need Alpha Flight at some point. But
they got to drop the puck at some point. They got to drop the puck.
Come on. This show rules. Can't wait to see what they do. I hope they do more. I hope it stays this good. I have faith after seeing 3 episodes out of the 10, that it will be this good. Cause how they've ended each episode, I'm like, I absolutely will be seated very early on Wednesday mornings, eating a giant bowl of the sugariest cereal I can get and a giant cold brew. And I will be watching X-Men.
And then shitting your brains out right afterwards because you do not have the resilience that you once had as a child,
as a young boy. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening or watching. We really do appreciate it. We've been, you know, have we fallen off on everything we said at the beginning of the year of trying to be more consistent? Sure. Don't judge us. All right. There's a lot going on and we're trying our best. Eric and I are getting together for whenever we have something we want to talk about, really. And when we're busy, sometimes that's harder to do. So X-Men, definitely have to talk about. Ghostbusters, definitely have to talk about. Godzilla, Kong, definitely got to talk about. Civil War is coming out, not the Marvel Civil War. Even though I had some messages from people being like, oh, so you saw Civil War, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I actually didn't see.
You should have said, yeah, I did. Back in what, 2016, 17?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I made a joke tweet about seeing it and Spider-Man being in it. But some people thought I actually saw it. I did log it on Letterboxd as a joke too. So it does seem like I actually saw it, but I
got to commit to the bit.
So we should have a lot more. It's starting to ramp up. I feel like we had Dune. We had, you know, I don't know. Dune's probably the biggest thing that came out. There hasn't really been much else that's on that kind of same scale or level. How dare I, Madam Web, which we never actually reviewed, but
I mean, we talked about it here.
Yeah, that's enough. So we will be back with Ghostbusters, we'll be back with Civil War, we'll be back with Godzilla, Kong, A New Empire, which I'm excited for, with an Adam Wingard and Dan Stevens reunion. I'll just treat that like it's the guest two with giant kaiju. That sounds awesome. So I'm in for that. And then we'll be back with some kind of more long form episodes as well. I know we want to talk about the Oscars a little bit, but I'm kind of over 2023. We still have the vacation episode. I think that'll make sense to be right before summer. I keep talking about it, but I really do want to do it, especially right now where there's a lot of theme park news and announcements and things like that. And for movie lovers, I think it's if you're not a theme park person, I'll try to convince you because it's a blast.
And David Chase and Terrence Winter are working on a horror movie right now. So I got to talk about the Sopranos bar in Aruba.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So anyways, that's an update from us. We'll talk more X-Men 97, I'm sure. We won't do the weekly like breakdowns or anything, but once it's done, I definitely want to see where this all goes and talk about it more. So as always, my name is Matt Rohrbeck. You can find more of my work around the internet, but mostly at untitledmoviepodcast.com. You can follow me on all those social medias at Matt Rohrbeck. And you can also follow the rest of Untitled over on Letterboxd at Untitled_movies. We post all of our videos, all of our podcasts, all of our ratings, all of our lists, all that jazz over on Letterboxd at Untitled_movies.
And I'm Eric Marchand. You can find more of my video reviews on RogersTV.com/CinemaScene and on the social medias at EM6211.
Until next time.
This one's for you, Morph.
I knew it. I knew that's where you were going. I was going to say it at the same time. Bye, everybody.